Welcome, everyone, once again to Oh, a Sopranos podcast, sponsored by Dave's Hot Chicken. When in L.A.,
that's a lie.
Eat Dave's Hot Chicken.
And three locations.
The campaign to elect Eric Early. We're going to beat
Schiff. Schiff won.
If he gets elected, I'm quitting the podcast.
As always, I'm Joe Spellman, and this is
David Feudernick.
And this is
Paul Golias.
And we're going to do a special ep for you called Hot Takes.
Hot Takes.
Hot Takes.
And this episode, we are joined by a special guest, my compatriot. We do an NBA comedy podcast together called The Super Hoopers. My friend, real weird guy, Matt Hill. He was texting me weird hot takes. He was rewatching the show and listening to the podcast simultaneously, texting me very bizarre takes, and I decided we should do a hot takes episode, have Matt on, so prepare yourselves, listeners, for some really weird takes.
Oh!
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 Welcome,
pleasure,
Matt.
Pleasure to be on. Pleasure to be on,
Thank
Dave.
You for coming on, Matt.
Big fan of the pod.
Thank Love you. It.
The, first hot take, the pod's better than The Sopranos.
That's not that
okay,
hot, actually.
No.
I think that's what the people are saying. Right.
Yeah, the
general.
People have spoken, actually.
Yeah, a couple people.
Also, you said before we started recording that Johnny the Sack.
Get his name right, Dave.
Johnny
He's the only
nut.
The best part of your podcast. Johnny the Nut Sacatino.
Sacatino.
Oh.
Hey,
you know
it right.
Getting it right. But that's okay.
Matt, get it right.
That's okay, because sometimes he doesn't even know his own name.
Hey, a lot of people said J.P. Salinger, J.P. Salinger before
right.
they got it right.
Exactly,
yeah.
exactly.
He,
you know,
he,
it takes a while to get that respect.
It's funny, he's often inspired by J.P. Salinger.
Yes, that's right. Yeah.
The Nut.
That is correct.
The Nut, dude. The Nut. I'm very sad the Nut's not going to make an appearance.
He's currently living in a tent on Skid Row.
Yeah,
Next episode.
He was in prison or something. But
That's that Eric Early speaking.
It's the Nut jumped the shark to me already when it's two episodes and when he wrote himself into a scene.
The Nut said he might improvise something later, and we promptly said no.
I did tell him to come over. He might get in an Uber.
Okay, well, we'll see.
All right, but we are here for Sopranos hot takes,
unpopular opinions,
things that you know most people don't feel about the show. We got some listener submitted stuff too. But we're going to start with our guest's hot take. So, Matt, would you like to give us your first hot take?
Yeah, I'm going to go with, like, kind of funny ones and serious ones. All right?
Okay.
So, just let you know, I don't mix
right.
it up. But
a little dramedy.
Yeah. I'll go with a serious one first. The episode, A Hit is a Hit, season one, episode 10. Great episode.
Oh, my God.
Fantastic.
Oh, my God.
Sir, this is the episode.
Is this funny or serious?
This is,
I can't tell.
This is dead serious.
Oh, my God.
Massive Genius. That's the episode with Massive Genius.
Yes.
But what you guys skipped over in your podcast, it also has Tony Soprano hanging with the country club boys and them bringing him there just to make fun of him.
Sausage.
That was
right.
so poignant.
No, You're right. That storyline is also dear to my heart. Anything where Tony has to like brush up against the Medigan, how as he says, like that is always ripe for entertainment.
Agreed.
But that does not save the episode.
Oh, yeah, it totally saves the episode. It's the heart of the episode.
But when you even say the name A Hit is a Hit, the first thing you think about is Massive Genius and the terrible late 90s rapper dialogue that these like middle-aged white people wrote.
Yes.
I don't think of that. I think of the poignant storyline with Tony. Look, as somebody who is often brought to hang with the cool people to be made fun of, which is actually, I think, what's going on right now. I'm invited so the cool guys can make fun of me.
You should know that Matt is born and raised in Huntington Beach, California.
Ooh.
You should just know that.
What is that? How is that relevant? How is that
he's
relevant?
He's not a tri-state fucking Italian or Jew like us, you know?
Oh, yeah, that's true.
He doesn't keep it real, okay?
I don't.
Very different upbringing.
I don't know anything about that. I watched the show, and I'm like, why do people live in this place? Do they know Southern California exists?
For our listeners, he is currently wearing a tank top and board shorts, and he walked in with a surfboard. So you know,
I gotta show off the tribal tattoo.
dripping wet, fresh out of the Pacific,
from the ocean.
Seaweed on you there, bud.
Yeah. No, but I think that I don't think the Massive Genius stuff is. I mean, I'm not gonna defend that. It's not good, but
okay.
The Tony scenes.
We agree on that.
The Tony scenes and how it wraps up with him playing the prank on his neighbor, forget the neighbor's name.
Cusumano.
Yeah. But also, that episode has the metal band too, right? With the
Visiting right. Day.
Yeah. That song, that scene is also pretty hilarious. So I think it has enough good to weigh out just kind of, well, I would describe it as mediocrity, not outright bad of the rap plot line.
So you wouldn't put it in the lower echelon of Sopranos episodes. You would not, like, let's say lower third.
No,
you
I would
put
not.
It, you would put it in
I
the
would not.
Pack.
Because I think the metal stuff is funny enough and that Tony stuff hit home with. I would put it, I would put it like 40th percentile.
And
so I guess just 7 percentage points higher than where you
And
you
where
have.
Would you rank Visiting Day as a band in all the bands that you've heard in your life? Would you?
Oh, no, man, I don't know.
We don't want to go there. Matt. Love Scott. Matt still thinks Scott lives.
Okay, Scott, man. I was listening to some Scott on the way over. A little less than Jake. Less than Jake helped my drive over.
Yep. Decent hot take. What else you got, Matt?
Okay, I'll go with the fun one. The girls at the Bing. Look, so I don't know.
Okay.
I've never been to New Jersey.
Okay.
Thankfully.
I like where this is going.
Please.
Okay. Okay.
They're too hot, right? Are they just, seem too hot for like a seedy strip club.
I thought you were going to say they were not hot
enough. Yeah, not hot enough. Because like in the earlier episodes, it seems like they just like found whoever.
Maybe it's because we're only like 1.5 seasons deep and they're still like not like figuring out that they can cast hotter women in this hit show. But I think overall, if you averaged them out, they're pretty hot, man.
Oh, again, that's what I'm saying. They're too hot for Jersey.
Too hot for Jersey.
Joe, how many Jersey strip clubs have you been to?
I have not been to enough, which I haven't been to any, really.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
But, you know, I guess, like, I am an aficionado of
well,
the strip clubs.
I guess this is where we need Zach Pino, because he's been to every single strip club.
I guess, conversations I have with Zach Pino downtown L.A., I don't know. I mean, I guess you're right because I've been to a strip club in Vegas, a really good one, and they're pretty hot there. Some of them. You know what the thing is that it's like half and half if they're really hot or they're not. And
oh my god,
you don't like this conversation. You don't like this
conversation. Maybe we should move on.
I'm so happy. Yeah.
Well, you know, I'm not. You know, I mean, like the big Russian girl that I had a lap dance from was not.
You mean the nut?
She forced one on me. Oh, I mean the nut. Yeah. I'm sorry. This is the conversation I had with Johnny the Nut Sacpino. I kind of agree with you. Maybe they are too hot.
I'm just asking, isn't it an accurate representation of strip clubs in New Jersey?
Probably not. No, I mean, is a real strip club that is in New Jersey.
Correct. And also, like...
Satin Dolls.
The Satin Dolls.
That closed and now reopened.
Yep.
Also, like there's... I forget her name, but there's a woman who was a stripper on the show who is also an actual stripper who still makes the rounds.
Yes.
So
oh, really?
I didn't know that. She was like at Sopranos Con and like
she's in the show.
I feel like the strippers were fairly realistic. I don't know
how much
and
money
like,
do you think she
I've
made
never,
at Sopranos Con?
I've never been to a strip club in Jersey.
Yeah.
But like,
let's go. Let's find
out. Do a strip club tour of North Jersey at least.
Yeah, there
sounds
we go.
Like my hell.
Yeah,
I
let's start with one in LA. There's one by my house.
hates.
There's one by my house and where my wife works, and let's go to that one, and then we'll do a tour of all 50 states. All
right, this is right. Research.
Yeah, research for the show. Okay. All right, let's get to the big one. This one I think you see all over the place, and I totally agree. The dream sequences are fucking stupid. So,
excuse me, sir.
But Matt, you said that you hate dreams.
I hate dreams,
like in general.
This could be just me.
Clarify with that.
I hate dreams. I think anytime people talk about their dreams is the most boring thing in the entire world. And
agreed.
And I think dream sequence. I don't think I've ever seen a dream sequence in any media that I enjoy.
Okay.
I really don't think they add much to the show.
I appreciate that clarifier. You are just not a fan of dreams in general. Do you like your own dreams? No, you don't care.
No, I don't care.
Are you mad at yourself if you have a dream? You're just like, fuck me, exactly. I'm such an idiot.
Fuck, that was so boring.
You're telling me that when Tony is in bed at the Plaza Hotel and he thinks he's in bed with a hooker... and it turns into Carmine Sr., you weren't like, whoa!
I was like, oh, fuck, another dream sequence. I got to sit through this for 10 minutes. Let me whip out
like
the phone.
Half hour, but...
That one was one of the worst ones.
It was a full episode.
But
and that was a great episode.
I mean...
Sir.
I definitely think that... You didn't watch that episode live.
So I watched The Sopranos live.
Okay.
I think from season 4 on.
Okay, so you did.
But I was like a moron. Okay, maybe listeners think I'm a moron now. But like, I mean, imagine me, but as like an 18 or 19 year old.
All right.
So,
right. Oof. Oof.
Just kidding. And then I've been rewatching it. So I didn't watch it any. I didn't watch it at all for 20 years.
Okay.
And then I've been rewatching it, and I'm in the middle of season 6.
That's
so you weren't necessarily appreciating it when you were watching
at
it.
At the time, I was
life.
Like with my boys in college, being like, "What the fuck, man?
Nobody got
a dream sequence."
Yeah.
And well, now I'm with my wife, going, "What the fuck? Another fucking dream sequence."
See, I think when I watched
my wife's
that,
with me, by the
when
way.
I watched that live back in whatever 07 or 06, whenever that was,
yeah.
I was just blown away. Like it was,
yeah,
it was. You didn't expect it happening. And I think, I don't know, I was along for the ride.
What I appreciate about the dream sequences is they're so spot on. They're more spot on and accurate to how dreams actually are, at least in my perspective,
sure,
than any other like movie or TV show that I've ever seen, where it's like people like switch in and out, like, you know, intermittently.
Yeah.
Like you're just between the context of one situation and into the next with no transition whatsoever. It's like I've never seen something shot or written that is accurate to how I actually dream. I obviously don't know about you guys.
100% agree with you.
Okay.
100%
But can you defend the season 2 finale where okay, Tony has a dream, and in the dream it's like, you know, Big Pussy is a rat.
Yes.
And then he's like, well, my dream told me he's a rat, so now I got to kill him.
Okay.
Like, he makes a life and death decision based on a dream.
Yes. You're correct. But the entire season, it's set up in the premiere of season 2 that Tony is in denial of knowing that his best friend Pussy is a rat. And he's been pushing that down subconsciously because he doesn't want to have to deal with the consequences of that. And when there's things that you're feeling and facts that you don't want to face, they often manifest themselves in dreams. The other night, I had a dream where I was on a talk show.
Snooze.
And, and I was introduced as, here comes Paul Gullius, failed author. and that, when I opened my eyes, I was like, well, fuck, that's what I'm insecure about. And so, like, I think that's very accurate to somebody who has the stressor in their life that they don't want to address, and then it all comes funneling out when he's in these like fever dreams that ultimately force him to face the fact that his best friend has betrayed him. And I don't think it was a dream, because sometimes when I hear people talk about this, they're talking about it as if like it's some like mystic thing where like, you know, it wasn't from Tony's own subconscious. It was like some divine entity that was like, Tony, your best friend is a rat. It's really something that's been in him his entire.
Wait, doesn't it literally kind of have that with a fish talking?
Like, yeah, but that's his subconscious talking. It's not like you know, some like supernatural or like angelic like prophet that's like telling Tony.
Plus, like, throughout the whole season, like, there's so many shots of Tony, like, anytime Pussy talks, Tony looking at him like, something's not right with you.
Right, yeah.
But he'll get,
it leads up to that.
I understand.
It's not just like, oh, everything's great. Oh, I had this drink. Oh, I had this bad food, and now, oh, yeah, gotta kill him.
But it kind of is.
It's not!
But here, like, okay, imagine this, all right? Me and you, Dave, we're in the mafia. Okay.
Oh, God. All right. God help us.
Yeah.
Yeah. We'd last long.
But I, like, you know, I think you're a rat. All right. I suspect
you're being a rat. Whoa, whoa, whoa. That's
okay. Whatever. You suspect I'm a rat. All right. Well, no. I suspect you're a rat. All right. Okay. And then I have this dream. I don't just go, whoops, I got to kill him now. I do some legwork. Like, Tony doesn't do any sort of like surveillance or anything like that.
Well, he finds the tapes.
Yeah, he does. He goes and into Pussy's home, and he finds the wire equipment.
Oh, that's right.
Yes.
Forgot about that. Sorry, it's been a couple weeks since I watched that episode.
Okay,
moving on.
Next hot take.
All right, so it seems like maybe I've won two of these hot takes and lost decisively on this last one.
Yes.
I forgot something. All right, my next.
You forget a lot of stuff.
That's true.
Yeah. My next take. I don't. Maybe this is not a hot take. But I think Robert Eiler is a good actor. Is that a hot take or is that?
It's kind of a lower hot take.
Or maybe
it's
I think AJ is a good character.
Okay, so when I was searching for some other hot takes, as we will get into later in this episode, it's basically like a broad fucking internet segment.
Right.
I saw a lot of people saying, like, hey, my hot take is, I don't mind AJ. I like AJ. Hey, Robert Eiler, not a bad actor. And I think what happened, like, I think I remember thinking the first time I watched the series, like, this kid has no talent whatsoever. And then as things went on, he got better, obviously. If you're in proximity to Edie Falco and James Gandolfini, you're going to pick up a few
things.
Should
get better.
Which he did.
He did.
There's no debating that he got better, but yeah, I think that's like sort of like the go-to hot take, if that makes sense.
Well, I feel like, because I remember at the time, I remember like Bill Simmons used to talk to Alan Sepinwall. Well, I guess it was later on, but he would always have Alan Sepinwall on his pod, and he would always make fun of AJ's acting. And so I mean, maybe that's where
Bill
like,
Simmons
came from.
Would,
but yeah. Like, that was his thing, was, like, AJ ruins
Classic
The Sopranos.
Simmons.
Like, AJ is, like, terrible. But then rewatching, I'm like, no, but AJ is supposed to be terrible.
You know
He's
what it
supposed
is?
To be
I think it is AJ. The rewatch. I think it is.
Robert
like,
Eiler. Overrated. Properly rated. Underrated.
Robert Eiler. Bottom nine actors all time.
I don't know. I never thought that he was bad.
I think he has moments of very bad acting, but also he has moments of fantastic acting. Like the scene where he comes down in the military uniform is so good, and he is so good, and that's like an earlier episode. Like,
yeah,
I like
season three.
The first thing I thought of is when like Tony starts listing things, and he fucking like turns his head and goes like that, like yeah, like that. I thought is classic, like. What you would do to your parents, and then he smashes his fucking car with a football helmet.
Right, yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I think that seems great too.
I think it's a very hard role to nail, first of all, because what the Sopranos did with these like adolescent characters, there's no other adolescent characters on television, at least at that time, that were like that, where they're just these like apathetic, kind of like not too bright people. Everything else was like Dawson's Creek, where like adolescents were talking like 30-year-olds, and you have to be like clever and snappy, and we're moving from one plot point to the next. And AJ's kind of just a very passive, sort of not that bright character, and for that, I think Robert Eiler brought that, and only got better as it went on. And also, what you were saying with rewatches, I think oddly, maybe this is my hot take, like on rewatches, you get the most out of the rewatch paying attention to AJ and his arc and like his comedic moments than like probably any other character. Like, I found myself laughing at all the shit that they throw AJ like on upon rewatches than I did on early watches. You know?
He's so funny when he's a little kid too. Like when he goes to visit Livia, fucking ZD. When he goes to visit Livia and he's like eating the candies that he like says he doesn't want, and
he doesn't know what gutters are. Like he's like, go clean the gutters. But yeah. Anyway, Robert Eiler.
First season finale.
Okay,
here we go. It's bad. Okay.
Bad.
I dream of Jeannie Cusimano.
Well, the thing that bumped me is, and maybe I forgot something, but Melfi.
Mm-hmm.
Like Tony, you know, he's going to her and he's like talking about his problems and all this stuff. Mm-hmm. And then in the finale, Melfi's just like, yo, you know, your mom is the one who tried to kill you. Like, why would you ever think that? Like what information does she have where you would say, you know what? I think your mom orchestrated the hit. Like, that is an insane leap of logic. And then also just to like make that accusation, like, come on. No? You're with it?
I think you're right. I think Tony sort of, especially with the way he portrayed his uncle, who Tony does blame for the hit, and then his uncle's relationship with his mother. If anybody is looking for reasons to blame a mom for anything, it's Melfi. And so I think she could conceivably make that leap where she knows about the relationship with Tony's uncle and can say,
but you have to simultaneously believe then that she is like the best psychiatrist and the worst psychiatrist, that she can like put all these pieces together,
right? Yes,
you know, whatever, mine the depths of his psyche, mm-hmm. and be like, it was your mom, but then also tell him, knowing who he is, that he might kill her,
right?
So yeah, it's like she's a simultaneously
kind of careless.
I find a little more believable than the leap of logic is her just like throwing that all out, seeing the state that he was in too when she said it, and just putting that out there. Yeah.
Anytime he's going through anything though, she's always like, "Who else did that to you?"
Right.
Like
yeah.
it's always,
yeah.
always like going back to Olivia,
the woman who birthed you.
Yeah. Which is also fair because like wretched human being.
Yes.
Like horrible, horrible person. Like, and it's obvious.
Melfi?
Like,
yeah, she's pretty terrible. Yeah.
whoa, real hot take.
Whoa.
It's super hard to 100% honestly portray therapy on TV and film. I'm
sure. Sure.
You know, especially if you're using the character as like moving a plot in some sort of way. Like, I mean, I see what you're saying, but I also see that like you can conceivably like believe that.
Yeah.
It would happen.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
And but ultimately, like, you know, Tony hears the tapes from the FBI of his mother conspiring with Junior. So he gets that confirmation whether Melfi said it.
Yeah,
or
look,
not,
I would buy it if Melfi heard the tapes.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
Tony, but
yeah.
Like, it's like,
yeah. Any reasonable therapist would, like, once like they were meeting in the car or whatever, any reasonable therapist would be like, I can't continue with you.
How many times? Yes. I mean, if you guys all, maybe you don't have to talk about
it. Which I guess they deal with that too, but anyway.
But if you've ever been in therapy?
Yeah.
Has your therapist ever said your mom orchestrated the hit against you?
I mean, yes.
This isn't Have You Ever, okay? Come on.
I love this segment. The next take, terribly directed show. And
in general?
Okay. So there are different levels of what a director does, right?
Yes. We should say that Matt is a director. Writer-director. Director in quotation.
I've directed things. Yeah, yeah. I won't say I'm a director. I won't call myself a good director, okay?
Yeah.
But I know what a director does, all right? So I think obviously in terms of understanding like the scene and like the goal of the scene, like obviously they achieve that. Getting incredible performances out of actors.
Yes.
Obviously they do that. But the visuals are very static. Like, it's like if you watch a TV show now, like you watch like a Narcos or a famously Breaking Bad or Better Call Saul, they have such visual panache.
Yep.
And The Sopranos has none of that. And then when it does it, it's like super weird. There's like weird wipes.
There was
and
one
like,
weird wipe.
We've talked about the weird wipe, okay? We know about the weird wipe.
But there's also weird fades. And then there's like
not often, though.
They do. There is like, I'd say once every two episodes, a very
Interesting.
Like,
okay.
Amateurish fade. And then there's like, I mean, in the last episode, or two episodes I was watching, it's like a really dumb cut. Yeah. Like Tony's like looking at a dinosaur book and it's like pterodactyls and then it cuts to birds flying. Sure. It's like, come on. That is like,
that's a little much.
Sure. I'm just saying for a for a prestige TV show.
Well, here's my argument.
You're comparing a show from the early 2000s.
Thank you, yes.
To shows that are on right now. Like,
the Sopranos,
that's not fair.
Like set the prestige TV show like movement basically back in the day. To get like prestige level directors for television was a lot harder than for Narcos or for Breaking Bad because Sopranos was such a success. Like, I think
You have your Rian Johnsons, directing TV shows,
And also like budgets were different and shit like that. And I know like the Tony Melvi scenes, not that you would need a lot of like interesting visuals and shit, but. Those were literally like the cameras were locked. Like they could not have any different angles or shots than those two back and forth shots of Lorraine Bracco and James Gandolfini.
Yeah.
Just because
your singles
budget,
and then your
time,
wide shot.
And back in the day, early 2000s, that like TV was just different back then.
Right. I understand that, but I stand by the take.
I
rewatching and I'm like, man, I wish this was like more dynamic.
Yes.
And especially those therapy scenes, which I know in the Sepulveda book, Chase talks about how he wanted it to be like that.
Right.
But I mean, people don't like those scenes.
Yeah.
I'm not on the hot take where those scenes are bad, but I do think they're not
boring.
Bad, but like, you feel how static it is, and they could use with some camera movements or interesting camera placements to help us get a little more inside the character's head beyond those static shots.
Sure. But also, like, I think, just to play devil's advocate, you're differentiating between Tony's life outside of therapy and Tony's life in therapy, and it's part of the reason why I think, like, as audience members, we get a little, like, stir crazy in those scenes, but so does Tony, like being in therapy. Like I think, it's reflective of like how static therapy can be. Like I don't know.
Yeah,
it's the same sentiment as David Chase didn't want any like music, like show themes coming in to tell the audience how they should be feeling. He didn't want to like put a camera in a certain way or move the camera in a certain way that suggests like, oh, here comes a very intense moment or here comes something that you should feel a certain way about, to just put them in locked frames, like lets the audience sort of interpret it as they will based on how the interaction is going. And I think that was smart, actually.
I agree.
But I do get what you're saying in general. Like, imagine if The Sopranos was airing now and TV had the budget that like a fucking Game of Thrones had now. Like, you could get some really sort of interesting directors to take chances and what would the show look like then?
Yeah,
like,
it would
I'm
look
on board with that.
It would look totally different. But I mean, the show still totally holds up, and I think it's because the performances are like pitch perfect and the comedy. It's like it's so much more rewatchable than I think The Wire or say Mad Men. Because, I mean, I don't know. I haven't rewatched Mad Men, but like, it's so funny.
Yes.
Like, what strikes you is like, man, this thing is just, you know,
it's
joke
hilarious,
after joke.
Yeah.
Also, like, I mean, we've talked about this before, but you can just jump in and like watch random episodes whenever you want. Once you've seen the show, obviously. But like The Wire, like you can't just be like, oh man, season 3, like I'm just gonna watch Amsterdam tonight.
Right,
like
you,
The Wire, you have to sit down and you have to watch the show like all the way through. Like The Sopranos has so many like great like just like one off episodes.
For sure.
Okay. This is my last one, I guess. This is not really a Sopranos hot take. It's more a hot take about the other prestige shows that came after it. And rewatching The Sopranos, it struck me how much I was on Carmela's side and how much I liked Carmela.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas you think about the other prestige shows like Breaking Bad and Mad Men, where you just hate, or most people dislike, Skyler.
Right. Huge, like, backlashes.
It's written that way. It's written that way. Like,
and Mad Men, January Jones's character, Betty Draper. You also dislike her. And here's the thing. It's like people are so reticent to blame the actor. They always blame the writer. You just did it. You just said, it's written that way.
It is.
It's poorly written for these characters. These characters are written so poorly. I'm going the other way. I'm blaming the actor, okay?
That's also fair.
I think it's like 80-20 acting writing. Like, I don't think those parts were necessarily poorly written. I just think Edie Falco is on a whole other level. Like, she is such a much better actor than those two actresses who play Skylar.
Oh, well, that, I completely agree with that.
And that's what I'm saying. But everyone always like, well, they should have written those characters better. It's like, no, fucking, let's put some blame on the actor. People just don't want to blame the actors because their face is on the screen and they empathize with them.
Right, right.
But they just want to put it on the writer. I'm putting it all on the actor.
With January Jones, I agree.
January Jones' character is like a baby. Like, I mean, she's such a like that Betty Draper is a fucking baby.
She's written like a teenage girl.
And that which speaks to like the 50s housewife or whatever. And it's completely different, I think, than Carmella. Because I at times don't like Carmella.
I think that's because
Edie Falco is a good actor. Because sometimes she's not supposed to be likable.
I think
I think she's hypocritical a lot, and yes. I think the writing is definitely trying to show that
for sure.
So there are times like that. Yes, yeah, she's like defiant and correct, and a lot of other times, but
she like bullies people.
Yeah,
rug up pie.
Yeah, and she
steals money from Tony.
Yeah, I think she
abuses her relationship with Father Phil. Like, she completely, like,
yeah.
They use each other, obviously, but, like, she completely, like, uses him to validate her, like, lifestyle. Like,
yeah, at the end of the day, she's an enabler for Tony.
Yeah.
Oh,
She's not killing people, but she's making sure the killer has dinner on the table every night and has his boxers and white tank tops washed every week.
But this is my argument for the writing, because you also get all those little tidbits of her as a person before Tony, like, or like what her life could have been without Tony. She went to college and like ended up like leaving because of him. Like her parents are not like mafioso people. Like, she is an like fairly intellectual person. She has like all these, like her flirtations with Victor Musso. Like there are all these sides of her that we see that we don't see from Skylar or Betty Draper.
Yeah, but I think, you know?
I don't hate Skylar either.
I think likability is the wrong word. It's just a matter of caring. Like, I don't care about what happens to Skylar or Betty Draper. I care about Carmella.
Part of that isn't writing.
It's 80% acting. 80% acting. Okay, I would say that
out of the three, she is definitely the best actor.
Sure. Anna Gunn as Skylar White is
I think
incredible.
She's great.
I think she's good, and I don't hate her.
A lot of the fans do. I don't hate her.
I don't think about her, really.
Right.
That's my point.
I think I will say I fucking don't
like Betty Draper.
No. Fuck Betty Draper if you have one thing you take away from
I was sad trip, that yeah. she got cancer, but...
all right. Well, now I feel bad.
Okay.
I take it back. Immediately what I just said.
Yeah. If you don't like Betty Draper, that is a lukewarm take at best.
My take is more like blaming the actors instead of the writers.
Sure. Okay.
I want to blame to go around. I have 5% of the directors too. Okay.
Matt, thank you for
1%.
Coming on.
Matt, thank you for those hot takes. Matt presented me with another hot take that he did not bring up.
Oh, the Buscemi is a bad actor?
Yeah. Oh my God. Oh, you were too ashamed.
Which,
no.
I should say that Steve Buscemi is my like childhood hero, my acting
really?
Hero. Yeah, I don't know.
I gravitated
towards him as when I was young, and I as a character actor, I adore him, and he's amazing on The Sopranos.
I think he's great.
Matt
disagrees.
Okay, look, here's the thing about that take. All right, my take is Buscemi is mediocre. He's just fine. Okay, he looks super interesting, so we like him. But if I were to isolate his line readings, and I just played you the line readings without you knowing it's Buscemi, you would just be like, that's an okay actor, okay? That's my take. But here's the thing. Here's why I didn't bring it up. There's no point in discussing it. It's totally subjective.
It's subjective, of course.
It's like, you could, there's like, what evidence can you bring? He's
it
a good actor,
subjective.
And I'll just say, no, he's not. I just think he's fine.
It's subjective, and you're wrong.
You think the best he's done is fine in anything he's done.
What he brings to the table is the way he looks. Like, he is providing something beautiful visually. Like, he's visually interesting to look at.
You're right with that.
Yeah. And
I would say interesting more than beautiful.
All right, that's what I mean. You know, whatever beautiful is.
So I guess Willem Dafoe, not a great actor, I guess.
No, that's part of being a character actor. No, but here's the thing. Like, I'm talking about, like, he is, so that's what he brings. He's not a bad actor where you're like, ooh, that was a bad line ring. But like, oftentimes they're just he could have done that a little better. He could have put a little extra mustard on that.
Leaves some to be desired.
If this was a Boardwalk Empire podcast, I could understand the take.
Oh, that's the thing. But here's the thing about Buscemi. I guarantee you, he must be the most likable person in the entire world behind the scenes, like on set.
Oh yeah,
because like directors work with him over and over again. He got the lead in Boardwalk Empire, that was Terrence Winter's show, right? Yes. After The Sopranos.
Yep.
And it totally ruins the show. It's like he's so miscast.
I think that was writing. I think they wrote the main character of that show to be less interesting than every other supporting cast member.
Is it, or great, that just Buscemi can't bring it? Can't bring that extra juice?
Well, then.
Also, you don't really buy him as like a charismatic like mob boss. You're like, nobody would follow this freaking skeleton looking bug eyed.
Yeah. In 1920, buy it. There's some weird looking mob bosses.
Boardwalk Empire is a separate, but that show is miscast like top to bottom. Like nobody's good in that show.
Whoa!
What?
Okay. Excuse me.
Okay, that's
Mr.
That's
Bobby Cannavale has
by
something to say.
That show more than any show, even more than The Sopranos, like supporting cast, they can introduce a character and you're on board with them. Like,
yeah.
Like at least for me.
I was on board with them. B-O-R-E-D.
I never saw it.
But again,
wasn't Paz de la whatever the fuck
Paz
her name
de la
is?
Huerta?
Yeah. She wasn't great.
There you go. I'm with Matt.
Thanks, Joe.
All right, Matt. Thank you for your hot takes. Yeah. It was very brave of you to come on the show and appreciate that. Sort of lambast your hot takes.
Just look over
your
shoulder, for the time being.
Yeah.
I'm just gonna sit back now and let you guys run the rest of your show.
Yeah, great. Oh, this is like Super Hoopers.
Have one of your beers.
Yeah.
Well, Super Hoopers, I gotta
open,
do all the work.
Crack
yeah,
it open
Matt,
by the
Matt,
mic, man.
On
our
mic.
On our NBA. Yeah.
Yeah, please.
On our NBA podcast, Matt does all the work.
All right.
Nice turn.
Me on this podcast, right, guys?
Yeah.
Correct. All right. So we're gonna get into some hot takes from across the internet. It's sort of like
baby.
Ballsier fucking internet segment. But first we're gonna start off with the people who actually fucking submitted to our show here.
Yeah, thank
good.
You.
Thank you for
listening to the last episode and taking our listening
yeah.
to what we asked for.
Listening to the
finally.
Last 20 seconds of the show and hearing us call for hot takes. We have Ben Fetterman, who actually fucking emailed us, guys.
Wow.
Actual
email in 2020.
He says, hey,
Ben.
Guys, just heard the Happy Wanderer episode and loved it. That was last episode. Please go and listen if you haven't.
Beefing with that. That's a hot take right there.
It is a hot take. I'm a Sopranos super fan. I do a rewatch once a year. Might be because I'm from North Jersey and it reminds me of growing up. My hot take is that there are way too many Sopranos podcasts.
Hey, Fetterman, hit the strip club for us. Let us know if it's
Let us know.
But
let
then
know,
he
Ben.
Goes into an actual hot take. I was into one that I won't name, but immediately stopped listening after the host pitched this theory to a director. I think it was Abrams. I think he's referencing Phil Abrams, who directed Remember When, and it was also a...
No, I think it's J.J. Abrams.
J.J. Abrams was on The Sopranos, as we didn't know.
One of the great Sopranos directors, J.J. Abrams.
He pitched to this director that Meadow was being subtly positioned as heir to Tony's throne. Obviously, this is asinine and contradictory to much more believable theory that the alluded to eventual heir apparent would be Patsy Parisi's son. Let me explain. There are many parallels between the brief exploration of Patsy's son and Tony's backstory. Both have fathers who are low-level crew members. Both exhibit ruthless entrepreneurship at a young age. Parisi burning off a toe with acid and Tony hitting Feach's poker game. I hope, if nothing else, this starts a turf war between Sopranos podcasts. Your new crew member, Ben. Thank you, Ben.
Thank you, Ben.
That was incredibly well written and thought out. In regards to the hot take being... was Patsy Parisi or Patsy Parisi's son Patrick? Or no, sorry,
not
Jason,
Patrick.
Jason
yeah.
being
so,
brought.
I responded to him thinking he was talking about Patrick and thought that Patrick was the one that poured the acid.
Patrick was the one who ends up getting engaged with Meadow at the end.
See, he's saying he's going to take over.
He's saying, no, he's saying that the one that AJ hung out with, Jason Parisi, who poured the acid on the poor fucking kid's toes, was going to end up being the heir apparent to Tony. I don't see a lot of actual evidence within the show. I see the parallel that you illustrate, Ben, with, you know, Tony's being sort of prone to violence and okay with violence at a young age.
Also, there is a chance like they become family. Like, let's say Meadow and Patrick marry. The Parisis and the Sopranos are family now.
Yes.
And maybe Tony does see something in
Jason's
that AJ does not
have. How many fucking episodes was Jason and Parisi on?
He was in maybe like two.
There's like that run of AJ being super depressed.
Yeah, he was with the Jasons. Yeah. He was with Jason Parisi and Jason Gervais.
The two Jasons. Yeah.
Carlo's son.
Right.
But you know what? Hot take. I don't agree, Ben. I'm sorry.
I don't agree. Yeah. I mean, I could see you fucking pulling that shit out of thin air and fucking, you know, saying that it's true. But, like, the guy was in, like, two episodes. Even Patrick Parisi, that guy, where, you know, where'd he come from?
I mean, I when I responded to Ben, I completely mixed up Patrick and Jason Parisi.
That's kind of
and it's
easy,
like they might as well have been the same person.
Yeah, it might as well have been the same person.
All right, let's move on to Heath Barr from Twitter.
No, Ben, email us what fucking podcast.
Yeah, let us know.
You want to start Heath Barr
at I think H I know what it was, but Herman's yeah, let us know.
Three. I think Jackie Jr. could have ended up being a lot cooler of a character. When Richie got out of jail and started taking Jackie under his wing, he could have schooled him the right way, and who knows, maybe Jackie could have ended up in that life after all and not ended up a dumbass.
Sorry, Heath Barr. Heath Barr is always responding to us on Twitter, so thank you for your support, Heath Barr. But also, Jackie Jr. sucked. it's a valid hot take. I get that it's a hot take. But Jackie sucked.
I don't see the potential. I don't see the mental capacity to be within the mob for him.
No.
No, not at all. No, he's one
really
of them.
His success was kind of hell bent on his relationship with Meadow working out, and it didn't, and that was his like downfall.
True.
He a dumb dumb.
Yeah, dumb.
All right, moving on. From Facebook, we have David Gray saying, a mob boss...
Oh, shit, the singer?
Oh, Babylon!
Not the early 2000s White Ladder...
That's like his only song, right?
Oh, Babylon!
Yeah, pretty much.
That was about the line on the L-I-R-R, right?
I don't know. Maybe it is.
No, he's like Irish.
Oh, you know what? It made me think of that because, you know, our friend of the pod, Steve Lacchioma, our friend of us...
What?
He would play that song all the time.
What?
In college.
The fuck?
Yeah, it's based on the Long Island Railroad line.
Anyway, David Gray says, a mob boss would never speak to a therapist. Source, Michael Frances. You know who Michael Frances is?
Is he the host?
Is he the guy that Chicken Frances?
No. He's the former capital regime of the Colombo crime family.
Oh.
Who is now doing like a media fucking blitz. There was like a BuzzFeed video of him critiquing mob movies and shit. And one of the things he said was like, Sopranos, no mob boss would ever see a therapist. Michael Frances and David Gray, whoever you are, I would like to say I did some research, and Frank Costello, the boss of the Genovese crime family, saw a Park Avenue shrink for years in the 1950s.
Ooh. Well, also it's the fucking premise of the show. It's like he sees the therapist and everyone's not like, oh cool, you're seeing a therapist. They're like, oh shit, like you might get whacked.
Exactly.
It's like a big fucking deal.
They're playing like this is a normal thing.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Right.
So David Gray, I'm sorry, but you are wrong.
Yeah. Go back to your
So is Michael Frances. You hear that, Michael Frances? You fucking
yeah.
Well, I don't support that. That was Gullius who said that.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, guess what? Tony Soprano wears shorts and he fucking goes to therapy. So suck on that.
Welcome to the 2000s.
Next hot take from Twitter, Rick Perry.
Oh.
Shout to Rick. Now, Rick is also one of our big Twitter followers. Love
Rick. Fishing with PH. Fish. Perhaps he's a fan of the jam band. It's crazy that Bobby elevated through the ranks as quickly as he did. He shows no more intelligence than Paulie. He makes the same kind of silly verbal gaffes. He never whacked anyone until he was in his 40s. And the guy killed, the guy he killed wasn't some big bad mobster. He was some French-Canadian dirtbag. Bobby was Junior's errand boy, and as soon as he got together with Janice, he becomes one of Tony's top guys. Bobby sucks, and if looking after a dying man for a few years is all it takes to become a high-ranking mafioso, it makes me think much less of what pygmy thing over in Jersey. Why did Tony not cultivate a deeper bench of reliable guys? In a business with so much employee turnover, a good leader would constantly be cultivating new talent to rise through the ranks. Bobby is far and away the worst bacala, behind his dad and a box of salted cod.
Ooh, hot take. I mean, of salted cod.
Hot take.
Rick, you came with the fucking fire, dude.
Yo, Rick, I got to disagree, though, because what happened was Bobby was already high up in Junior's organization. And then it's like when they merge, you're not going to give the guy a demotion. Like, you got to keep him at the same level. It's like, it's like when two companies merge, it's like you can't bump the vice president down to errand boy. You got to keep, he has got to keep the title of VP.
Plus, like, Bobby is arguably like the most faithful person in the whole operation. He puts up with like taking, like going to pick up Junior's fucking medications and shit. Like, Paulie would have never done that shit. And Paulie does all that bullshit where he's like, he's working Tony, he's working Johnny Sack. Like, he tells Johnny Sack about the joke that Ralphie makes, which, like, from Remember When, we know that, like, Tony knows that it was him that did that shit. Like, the only person that he can fully trust, and he can't fully trust anybody, is Bobby.
That's true.
And eventually, obviously, marries Janice and all that shit. But, like, but even before that, like, the fact that he's so loyal to taking care of Junior, like, shows that he, like, he deserves to rise in the ranks.
I think you're spot on. I think it comes down to a matter of trust and who Tony really can put his faith in to not fucking betray him.
And they're, like, close in age. Like, Paulie's
married
older.
To a sister.
Like Paulie, like, comes from, like, Johnny Boy's, like, era. Like,
right.
Like, which Tony always has an issue with, like, which is part of the reason why he has issues with Feech. He has issues with Richie. Like, these people from, like, the generation before him or slightly before him, like, they've, like, tried to fuck him over.
It's true. Okay, moving on to Mitch Wissick.
Oh.
He says, Kennedy and Heidi, which is the final season episode in which Tony kills Chris. I hated watching Tony kill off Christopher. It definitely wasn't a mercy killing. He looks at that baby seat and makes that choice to basically kill his adopted son. Tony is disgusted and feels responsible for what Christopher has become, but I feel like he would have kept giving him more and more chances, because that's what we do as parents. So I hated it. But to immediately contradict myself, I do wish he would have let AJ drown in the pool.
Should we?
But
should we present this to Matt, who's the only father in our group here? Matt, how do you feel about that?
Well, big spoiler for me, because I haven't got to that episode
yet. Yeah, but you watched the show before.
I kind of forgot, though, that he does that. Now
he holds his nose.
Now
closed.
Remembering it. Yes. But he's not his son. He's not his son.
He's not.
And he never was, like, I don't know.
I also think that, you know, when Tony looks in the back seat and sees the baby seat that was impaled by a branch or whatever.
He's protecting the chub.
Yeah. No, I don't think that Tony was, like, thinking, oh, man, I have to kill this guy to protect this child. I think he was thinking, oh, here's something I can use as an excuse to justify my killing this person so I don't feel as bad. I think that's what it came down to.
Probably,
like,
right.
Because he repeats that, like, throughout the rest of the episode, saying, like,
did you see the baby seat?
Yeah, right. Like, this and that. He's just trying to make himself feel better about fucking killing Chris. Now, I don't think Chris probably would have survived anyway. He was already coughing up blood from his mouth.
Yeah.
And the paramedics were not close to being on their way at that point. So did Tony sort of, like, let's just finish this up quickly, and it's also convenient to me? Maybe. But I do think that the eyeing of the baby seat was Tony justifying to himself and nothing else.
Yeah.
Maybe that's my hot take.
Also, that's like a big old nose, too. You know, it's just kind of asking for it.
Museum of Noses.
Next
there goes
from
the friggin' Mona Lisa.
Mike Yusey. Vin McKazian.
Oh, Mike Yusey.
Vin McKazian is Peter McAllister. Discuss.
That's a hot take?
That's a hot take. No, that's, of course, John Hurd's character from Home Alone.
No,
is
they're,
Peter McAllister.
No, they're different.
I could see if Peter McAllister blames himself for leaving his son home alone, maybe he fucking leaves the family and
becomes a cop.
Yeah, perhaps. I could see him, Peter McAllister spirals out into a cop in North Jersey.
I guess we don't. Do we know what Peter McAllister does for a living? No.
We don't. No, we've never got
so,
that.
So he could have been a Chicago
been a
PD.
Yeah. Then he moves to Jersey.
He could be like a straight-laced detective or like a desk cop.
You know what? I'm going to say this hot take.
I like
be
it.
Spot
also, absolutely not. Not with that fucking house. He's definitely
that's
in
true.
Finance
yeah,
or something.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
He definitely would have brought in the Wet Bandits to be part of the Mayo crime family.
Yeah.
No, but okay. So from here, so those were all our submitted questions, our hot takes. But from here,
that one was submitted.
That one was submitted. Yeah.
What on what?
Facebook,
Twitter,
on Facebook,
on Facebook.
On Facebook?
Mike Yusey, Milford guy.
Yeah.
Milford, Connecticut.
This.
Guy.
So from here, I broke them into categories: cast and characters, episodes and seasons, and hot takes about plot points. So let's go through these here. We have on Reddit user Ronbelli Canelli. Bobby was a better Santa Claus than Pussy.
Do we ever see Pussy being Santa Claus?
Yes,
in
a flashback.
Little glimpse.
He's like wasted. No, absolutely not. No
fucking
No, Pussy was fucking fantastic Santa. Yeah, he was hammered, but he was fucking dope.
Yeah, he was hammered and also a rat at the time, but he
also
was a great Santa.
Also, what great Santa doesn't reek of liquor? Like, come on.
Yeah.
All the best ones do.
Okay, this one from user Galway underscore Haran, who we've heard from before.
Yes.
Ada Turturro is top three actors in the series after Gandolfini and Falco. If you hate Janice, that means she's doing a great job. Would you put her in third place after Gandolfini
she's
and
definitely
Falco?
Above a Shemmy.
Whoa!
I mean, I will agree with him because she's just in more episodes.
Sure,
maybe
above
Buscemi,
but like,
I think Imperioli. I think Imperioli's three.
You gotta put
Imperioli,
right?
And then Dominic Chianese.
Yes.
Yeah. I would put that 3-4, but she's really good.
She's fantastic.
She is very good,
but not top three. Not top three.
She's definitely top 10.
Definitely top 10.
I think she might be my 5. She might be my 5 after Chinese and Imperial.
I mean, you can't discount Nancy Marchand for me.
Oh,
for me,
right.
She's very good too. But
she's
got
me, but not in as many episodes.
I appreciate this hot take. I mean, she is very good.
She's
good.
Incredible. She is very good.
Do you think
she's better than Dre De Matteo or?
Yes.
Really?
Yes.
I don't know.
Dre De Matteo is really good.
I love
Dre
De Matteo.
She's good too. She's good,
especially like season 4 and 5, like where like things are, you know, like tougher. You know, once she is like an informant, she's fantastic.
Right.
But I don't know. Ada Turturro also, like, the character of Janice just brings out so many juicy things of Tony.
Right.
Like, the stuff between her and Tony is so good.
And she's also really funny.
She's gone through, like, such a up and down, a crazy arc, like, being this fucking hippy-dippy that comes in, and then being this fucking, like...
Mob
like,
wife.
Alpha,
right. Yeah.
Killing people.
Yeah, mob wife, and then... Yeah. And also her relationship with her mother,
and then
she has a baby, and her relationship to her baby, she's so fucking horrible
and also,
to the baby.
I mean,
her mother was to her.
Yes,
like, I mean, it's I don't know. She is very, very, very.
I know on other pods, like, talk about like favorite episodes and stuff. I mean, I don't think I can at this point say my favorite episode, but like Soprano Home Movies is so fucking good and
incredible.
She's so good in it. Yes. Like everybody, like the four of them are so fucking good in that episode.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
We all love Ada. Jury's still out.
We love Ada.
She's top three.
Yeah. She'll be on our podcast.
Yeah,
soon.
She'll get on.
With Nick Turturro.
She'll come on.
Yeah.
She'll
get her and Nick.
We'll get
her and Nikki on.
It's in the works.
It's in the works.
No.
Yeah, dude. Yo, Johnny the Nut got it right about her.
Yeah.
No, but you know what Johnny the Nut is right about is how the dick doctor became.
Oh,
yes.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. We want to hear that.
I was thinking like, how did they meet?
Penile implants.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Dr. Ira Fried. Yeah. Okay. Next hot take. User King Egbert. Sorry. Charmaine Bucco is the only character who understands who and what Tony is. What do you think?
There's that psychiatrist that Carmella sees.
Like the old Jewish
Dr.
guy.
Krakow.
Jewish
yes.
one.
Yes.
Like
he calls it as
he
as
it
is.
Perfect.
Like really.
Yeah. I love that actor too. So his performance is so subtle.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's great.
Much better than
Bashir. He's really good. He died soon. You son of a bitch. He died soon after like the taping of that.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. That guy was on death's door.
God.
You couldn't tell?
No wonder he was so subtle. He was dying.
But Charmaine, yes, I think she has the outsider perspective that Artie certainly doesn't. I think she doesn't know to the extent of what Tony is, but I think her suspicions are even more accurate than what Carmella allows herself to consciously acknowledge. Right? Yeah.
Author.
Yeah.
Author.
What do you guys think, Charmaine? She know who
Dude,
Tony really is.
I'm a big Bucco fan. I'm a big.
We love the Buccos.
Love the Buccos.
Pretty Charmaine.
Yeah, sure.
To thine own self be true.
Okay, next hot take from user Jet Black Jelly.
Oh, baby.
Gigi was a nothing character, and I didn't know who or what he was. Or I didn't know who or what he was supposed to be until he died on the shitter. Hot take.
You know what? As you watch it, I would agree. As you were watching it for the first time, but now when you rewatch it, you get to like see him more and you're like, oh, he's in this scene. Oh, I didn't even know he's in this episode.
And like, he's in a lot, but he doesn't leave an impression.
No,
which is
he doesn't.
Why I sort of agree with this.
I like Gigi.
On my first watch, I didn't know who the fuck Gigi was when he died.
Sure.
No, because even I feel like we've had this conversation where we're like, wait, he was the boss of this crew, and
right?
Then this
crew. What like, happened? When? Like
we don't know like where he was, and he seemed like an underling at first, and then he was a boss. Like
it is like
a capo.
It is a good chink in the, like the whole, idea that we hear later on at the end of the series, where everybody is cursed who is the capo of that crew.
Sure, right.
So it does add to the curse of the crew.
Sure, fine.
I agree. But that's
which they could not have known
but
when they
dies
were making
and then
season
Ralph
two.
Becomes capo, right?
Yes.
Right. Yeah, that's why he promotes Ralph.
So
yeah.
he's just a fucking pawn to get Ralph's character even, bigger status.
This one's for Matt from user DDust102. Never felt Steve Buscemi fit in. Seemed like an SNL skit in every scene he was in. Too recognizable a face.
The fuck is going on?
We've discussed. And to be honest, when I was researching this, there was a lot of that.
Hell yeah. I think here's the thing. I think if you're rewatching the show, like Buscemi is so famous.
Yes.
And he remains famous.
Yes.
Where you're kind of like, if you're like 20 now, you rewatch it, you're like, whoa, what's Buscemi doing in this show? Because nobody else has really had like a huge post Sopranos career that you would be familiar with.
Sure.
Like even Ralphie.
Yeah.
Like Joey Pants.
Yeah. He like works consistently, but yeah, he's not.
But he's not like he was more prominent back then.
Yeah.
Right.
Like he was at Buscemi's level back then, but now he's kind of faded away.
Yeah.
So I can see him sticking out to someone rewatching the show.
I agree with that. And I guess he was also pretty famous, I guess, when he was first on the show.
I was very excited when
I remember like when they announced he was going to be on the show.
Yeah.
Part of that was that Sopranos fans were so excited because at the time Pine Barrens was like such a and it still is such a revered episode and he directed it.
Yes.
So I think people were very excited in Sopranos world especially because it's like, oh, you're adding someone who is a pretty popular actor who directed like up until now, probably the most famous episode, right? Who understands the show, and they're and he's going to like be Tony's cousin. Like, that's going to be amazing.
And yeah, and people like myself who was like what 25 or whatever the fuck I was when he like was in. And I was like, oh, yeah, it's fucking Steve Chevy from Reservoir Dogs. It was like my, like,
Reservoir
everybody
Dogs.
Loved that shit when I was in high school. So it was just, it just seemed perfect to me.
And also,
but
I
can
was,
see where other people
I was obsessed,
feel it being weird.
I was obsessed with a movie called A Trees Lounge.
Trees
that
Lounge.
He, oh, yeah.
That,
a lot of Sopranos.
That he wrote and directed, exactly, with a lot of Sopranos people in it. you know, all the
when
greats.
He is, when he,
Daniel Baldwin, all the greats.
What?
But I think his storyline is maybe the best storyline of the show. Like,
oh yeah,
like what happens
so
to him
good.
Through the course of that season.
It's a great arc.
It's such a good arc. I mean, where's my arc? There it was, right there.
Yeah,
right.
Exactly. Okay, so maybe if somebody else besides Buscemi was in that role, that would.
Can
been
you imagine how much better it would be?
He is also a fucking from New York. He's Italian.
Yes. Yeah,
he's a New York actor. Like, I mean, you know,
he was an FDNY.
Hold on. Imagine this. Imagine switching Buscemi and Joey Pants. Do you think the show would have been better?
No.
Buscemi plays. Could you see Buscemi unhinged as Ralphie?
No. I don't like it. I don't like it.
Mm. Would have been better.
Nobody else could have played Ralphie.
Next hot take from user Vegetable Fart. Livia was a bad mother, but a good grandma. Except when she dropped that nihilism bomb on AJ.
What?
I mean, I don't know. I mean, define good. I mean, it's like, I guess she's just not an actively bad grandma. I don't know if she's like a good grandma.
Also, if you're telling your your like adolescent grandson that we all
die alone
and it's a big nothing, like, yeah, I think that disqualifies you as a good.
I don't know. You need to hear that though. At some point.
don't remember hearing that from any either of my grandmas. But
my grandparents were like, "Do you want food? Do you want more food?
Would you like to keep eating?
More candy?
We live in a jungle, and we're all gonna die. That's not what grandmas are usually saying.
Nah.
This one from user Titty Slapper 123.
Sure.
Silvio is a cartoon mobster caricature doing a bad Al Pacino impression, and I can't take him seriously at all.
I will say, in my acting classes in college, my like mentor would often say, like, there are actors like this, and then there are actors like Steven Van Zandt on Sopranos.
Really?
And he used him as an example of like a caricature.
To illustrate what, though?
To illustrate like someone who is not like conveying a real person.
I like him. I mean, I feel like he's just kind of. I mean, I think part of.
I mean, we're just coming off of like probably his most entertaining moment in the series.
With the cheese.
With the cheese.
Here's stuffed cheese. But that's a great scene.
Yeah.
Here's the problem with that. Those people are fucking characters.
Yeah. Like, this is a guy who grew
that's how
up
they
watching The Godfather and emulating The Godfather.
Correct.
That's why he's.
Yeah,
like that.
Correct.
Meet those people in New Jersey. They're fucking characters.
They're real, they
people
exist.
People will be like, oh my God, I went to New Jersey and I saw people that are just like the Sopranos. Yeah, no shit. Because they're fucking like people who think
also
they're in a movie or some shit. They think they're in the mob. Like, you know, Bagel Boss guy.
Right.
I mean, it's like, look, if I didn't know Johnny the Nut, like, was real, I would think he's a caricature, but he's like a real dude.
No, he's a real dude. He lived in Bergenfield, New Jersey, and now he lives downtown in Skid Row.
But I will say,
sex writer.
If you see interviews with Steve Van Zandt, like, he didn't want to do the show because he was worried that like he was doing that.
Right. Yeah, but then he also is saying, you know, the actor in our family is my wife. Van Zandt.
Not a hot take. Very like
no, that's
very
a hot
cold,
take.
Actually, that
cold
right. brings
but
me
also,
to the next hot
but
take.
Also, Steve Van Zandt is like that too. Like it doesn't like you know. I don't know.
The next hot take, user Homer 1969. The hiring of main actors / producers' family members nearly ruined the show. Van Zandt's wife, Chase's daughter.
Yep.
Bracco's sister. Not sure of any others.
Oh, she's fine.
But just terrible talent.
Also in A Tree's Lunch.
I also don't think that they almost ruined the show. It would be a ballsy argument to say they ruined an episode, much less the entire series.
You do think that, like, probably if Maureen Van Zandt was a better actor, maybe that character would have gotten more.
Exactly.
But, like, she had just enough.
Right.
She had enough, enough to keep Steve Van Zandt happy. It's like they give like the big meaty Carmela Friend stuff to Ro.
Right.
Correct. Who's like a great
actor. Amazing.
Yeah.
Ro is great. Okay, so moving on to episodes / seasons hot takes. User Snakey Snake Zero says, I didn't care for the Pine Barrens episode, but not because not because of content. My issue was because it didn't even resemble the real Pine Barrens. About as inauthentic for New Jersey as the way Cherry Hill was portrayed in Harold and Kumar Go to White Castle.
Jesus Christ.
Oh my God.
Well, we gotta ask Coco about that.
This is like deep Snake Jersey Zero shit. Is a Jersey boy.
Yo, Kate, here's the thing. Nobody fucking cares about Jersey. So this person, all right?
Yeah, whoa. I guarantee you Cherry Hill was filmed in Burbank.
Yeah.
Probably.
It's just like, look, do you really care what the inside of a dumpster looks like? You know, it's just all, yeah, it's hold all on, just hold yeah, on. Different.
The show Judging Amy was supposed to take place in Hartford, Connecticut. I wasn't like, no, that's not the street.
But still, like, Matt, like, I agree with you, but I feel angry that somebody from Huntington Beach is saying this.
Like, just no.
That's true. That's an attack on us.
Have you ever driven through the Pine Barrens?
I haven't. I mean,
If you drive all the way down fucking Garden State Parkway, then you will drive through the Pine Barrens.
Connecticut to Florida.
And you know,
so.
I know, yeah. But there is.
I guess I have.
But there is a specific point where you just see a motherfucking shitload of trees. And that's the Pine Barrens, and I think that's where they were.
Yeah, so what about it, like, doesn't seem like the Pine Barrens? I don't understand.
I don't know. Apparently,
if you go deep
Jerseyites,
into the Pine Barrens, it's very deep woods. Like,
I don't know. I guess they would be deep in there because they have no phone service.
Hey,
and
why doesn't
like,
this listener go get himself lost in the Pine Barrens?
Yeah, exactly. Tell us what the differences are.
That's where the Jersey Devil is, you know?
this one from...
You know that?
User
666, sign of the devil.
Oh, there's a Jersey Devil is in the Pine Barrens.
User BFaust916 has two hot takes for us. Season 5 was boring and predictable to anyone with a brain.
What?
And after season 2, the show became a parody of itself.
No, season 5 is the best season.
Season 5 is the best
that I've watched so far. I'm at 6.5.
No.
Season 5 is incredible.
Yeah, it's the best season.
Season 5 is the best.
I think it's the best season.
It's come on.
It's phenomenal.
And you know what? Maybe because Buscemi's in it.
True. You're wrong, user Beefhouse. This one from user Red, White, Blue, Badger. Oh, fuck.
Oh, yeah.
Christopher, season 4, episode 3 is great. I think it's one of the more hilarious episodes of the show, with everyone up in arms and the satire of tribalism and groupthink, which I think is still highly relevant to our politics and social issues today. And the final scene is just epic. Christopher, of course, the Columbus Day episode is maligned by the fan base and casual watchers alike. What do you guys think?
That one didn't stand out as being terrible to me. I don't know. I read in the Sepinwall book that it's like people don't like it.
People hate it. Yeah.
Yeah.
I didn't think
that's like one of the most hated episodes.
But
that,
why is this hated so much?
I think people just felt like it didn't advance the story, the plots of the season, and that it was a little contrived. And I think, people just weren't into the story.
Yeah, now, but Artie gets hit in the head with a shake. That's
yeah, and he's like great. In the car, right? He's in the car.
He's all scared.
One thing I read in the Sepinwall book was that storyline for Silvio, where he's like very protective. He's like, my father was the Knight of Columbus, and like, you know, we don't want to lose the Columbus Day Parade to the Native Americans.
Yeah.
Where he was very defensive. That was meant for Paulie, Tony Sirico. But because Tony Sirico had back surgery, if you remember, in the first half of the fourth season, he was out. And so they gave that storyline to Silvio, which didn't exactly match up.
Right.
But you know that Paulie would have definitely like had a fucking say about this.
It would have been way better with Paulie. Right? And then also what we know later, because his father is like a random GI. Right?
Yeah.
So it would have been extra meaningful. But
for sure.
Yeah.
Although if it was, did they give Paulie that with the fucking parade and the hat?
A little bit. Yeah. I think there was a little bit of that.
Yeah.
But I think overall it would have been better if Tony Sirico had taken that storyline.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So now moving on to the plot and the show in general. User Love Liberty Taco says the theme song is too goddamn long.
What? Well, I mean, who cares?
I mean, I guess, I like
Why is that a hot take?
Yeah, you got the skip intro.
Yeah, you can skip the intro anytime you want.
Also, I refuse to.
Also, why would you skip the intro? You don't skip the intro because
the intro
theme song
gets
is
you
dope.
All jacked up. Yeah.
I think the song's terrible. I don't know. That's a hot take, but I don't think
it's not something that I'm listening to for pleasure. But it's still like amps me up for the episode.
Yes.
For what it is as an intro to this series, I think it's fucking
iconic. It's like the Curb Your Enthusiasm theme too. It's like which is the opposite. It's like 2 seconds long. Right. But like it just like gets you so amped up for the episode. I love it. That's why I never skip it. So fuck you.
This one from Twitter, John Cole, at John G. Cole. You knew this one was coming, guys. Every scene with Tony Soprano and Dr. Melfi was hot trash, and she could have been completely deleted from the entire show, and no one would notice on a rewatch except maybe that the shows seem shorter. Are you fucking kidding me? This is like the least,
it's the most predictable, like, in quotations, hot take.
Because really, there's like a big percentage of the people who watch the show and love the show who are like, Melfi scene, fast forward.
Yeah, it's like, I want more fucking whackings.
Yeah, I think what those people don't realize is that you were interested in the show because of those scenes.
You were invested in who gets whacked because of fucking Tony's therapy sessions.
Yeah.
Half of them.
Yeah.
Like,
they're a little too long.
All right. Watch Boardwalk Empire if you want all the whackings from what I don't know about that show.
Yeah, go take a boardwalk.
This one's kind of interesting. You from user Man Snake Sham.
Bone. Man Snake Bone.
A lot of snake themes.
A lot of snakes, I'm noticing. None of the characters are actually tough. Every scene I can think of where one of the crew is tuning someone up, it's always either a sucker punch with a weapon or when the enemy is outnumbered. Ooh, dirty fighter, huh? Figures.
What?
No, doesn't, like, Tony, like, gets, like, attacked multiple times by, like, more people. Doesn't he, like, also, like, fight off two guys with guns? Like, in a hit? Like,
Man Snake Ham, or whatever the fuck your name
Man
is.
Man Snake Moan.
Fucking face one of these guys and then come talk.
Well,
to
you know
tank.
What? They Man, are.
What was it? Man Bear Pig?
They are all actors, and, you know, we are all pussies.
No, but, like, James Gandolfini is a big dude.
Yeah, he's
like
fucking huge. Bunches.
But he's a teddy bear.
Yeah, but as Tony Soprano, he was pretty fucking intimidating.
Oh,
yeah,
absolutely.
Whether he was waiting for... I mean, I think of the episode where he...
Furio beat the shit out of people. We just talked about that episode.
Yeah, please, face Furio in like head-to-head, man.
Yeah.
See what happens.
Shoot you in the kneecap.
Furio, not the best character. That's a hot take.
Oh, jeez.
I agree.
The show?
He's not the best character. I agree.
He's not terrible, but he's like bottom tier.
Jesus. No.
Tony's...
No.
Okay.
It goes Chris, Polly, Sil.
This one from user Hoju64. Tony was the root cause of the Richie Aprile problem. If he had been nice to Richie when he got out of jail and not
he would
pissed
have been
all
dead,
over the jacket,
yeah.
He would have had a good, tough, capable captain over one of his crews.
Terrible take.
Come on. There was nothing Tony could have done differently. Then, I mean, be nice to Richie.
Richie's
are you kidding
the
me?
Fuck? He's a psychopath, man.
Yeah.
Come on, read the children's book, Give a Mouse a Cookie, you know?
Spoiler alert, don't give the mouse a cookie.
Don't give the mouse anything.
Don't do that. Yeah. Yo, give the mouse some poison.
Yo, take a jacket off that mouse.
Have your sister poison the mouse.
Give to your maid.
Okay. Now this one is this person deleted their Reddit afterwards, but
no,
I still have the post.
Delete your account.
This one, and you'll see why. Tracy's death didn't really affect me. I don't hate women or anything, and Ralph is still a POS. But she was nothing. She was mouthing off and hitting a coked out violent mobster. What did she expect to happen?
I'm surprised they didn't begin with. I'm not against women or anything, because it's always like the racist person who's like, okay, I'm not racist, but
right, yeah,
hear me out.
Yeah,
wow,
we should measure heads.
It's funny. I've I've had multiple conversations about Johnny with Johnny the Nutsack Pino about this issue.
Okay.
And he would have to agree with this person.
He loved it. He loved it. He thought that was a tender, loving
scene. He thought Tracy had a cup. He tried the zucchini bread and it was trash.
He thinks they stole State it bread. From him, that episode.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I don't know if I agree with that.
Do you think this person thought they were posting on 4chan and then they're like, whoa, oops, it's wrong account. No.
Delete.
Deleted user, you fucking suck, man. Hey, respect women. User, cheese nuts.
This oh my God, they keep coming.
The waiter wasn't innocent. Maybe he didn't deserve to die. But a table of 8 to 10 guys in an upscale restaurant, gratuity is going to be included in the check. Asshole waiter was trying to get a little extra for himself.
He probably thought he would shame
Chris into giving him an extra bump, but he didn't realize who he was fucking with. He should have gone back inside before he got hurt.
Oh my God.
It wasn't included.
Yeah, it wasn't included.
This is the reason why it's included. The restaurant industry saw this episode.
Things changed after that
episode. They named the bill after the dead waiter.
Is he mad at the waiter or is he mad at like the writing staff?
He's mad at the waiter.
Yeah, I think.
He's clearly mad at the system where like you're required to tip.
I don't hate service industry workers or anything.
New Jersey passed a law that you have to autograt on parties of 6 or more, so it would have been autograted.
That's true.
Sure. Are you sure? Back in the day?
I
don't know.
I don't think so. I'm just kidding.
Probably.
No, they didn't.
All right. This one from user House Derluge. The show would have been vastly improved by having Tony go through with a hit on Carmine Sr., then having season 5 be the final season, with the New York New Jersey war motivated by Johnny Sack seeking vengeance for the hit. I don't think so, my guy.
Tony's actually very smart and like a good boss, like planning things out, and like it just shows how he thinks things through.
And like I mean, so much of season 6 is 6B is Tony trying to avoid having to go to war with New York because he knows they have like way more muscle than them. Like,
they don't want
to fight New York.
Right. No, I think
it's like Johnny Sack ends up like taking it to that place.
People were so thirsty for that fucking war between New Jersey and New York from season 4 when Pauly started like talking out of school to the New York family and Johnny Sack and shit.
Right.
And the fact that they delayed it 2 seasons was completely realistic. Like, there's no mob wars fucking actively happening today. There's not bloodshed on the streets of New York and New Jersey, like, left and right. Like, the writers holding off was actually really smart and accurate to what that landscape looks like.
Like Ellie Honig said, it would cost too much.
Yeah, you're right.
It's bad for business. Yeah. Bad for business. Like, they try to avoid bloodshed as much as they possibly can't.
Yeah. Okay, hot take. User Field of Corn. I firmly believe.
How many more are there?
No, there's. We're coming.
Yeah, good. Okay.
I firmly believe that Carmine Jr. would have been as effective as a boss like his dad was. Honestly, maybe even more so. But until he was, it would have been hard to verify that I thought that he could have been more effective.
Is this Carmine?
That's a little Carmine for sure. That's a little Carmine fucking line.
Ray Abruzzo?
Ray Abruzzo.
Doesn't he follow us?
I think he might. I think he just might. It does sound like it's written by the character.
Ray, just come on the pod. Just email us directly, man.
Just admit that you want to talk to us.
User Bob Lord of Evil. The show is never better than when it is leaving giant gaping plot holes.
Huh? Okay. I mean, sure. I mean, yes, like I like that.
I kind of agree.
I think the whole point of the show and many of its arcs were to purposely subvert expectations and conventional storytelling. I think that's how David Chase gets his kick.
What are the giant plot holes? Are the Russian and the one I pointed out in season 1 with the mom, but no one else points out. But it's really just the Russian, right? Isn't that the only like?
I mean, there's a lot of the actual ending.
No, but the end is like brilliant. Yeah. Like, I mean, the end is really good.
Yeah.
There's little things that, like, you're like, why was that shot there? You know, like,
right. Yeah, that's like that's the aforementioned bad directing.
Yeah, and I think
that why
is,
was there
that
wipe
the
with Carmella?
David Chase is just like, yeah, fuck off. Like, I don't care. Yeah. And I really like that because I like saying fuck you to the audience.
Part of the reason why The Sopranos is so watchable is because it subverts those expected storytelling conventions and you don't know where it's going.
Yeah.
And that includes having parts of it be sort of like not dull, but not as exciting as you would expect from like a primetime television show where every act out has to be a cliffhanger. You know, it's like this is what kicked off that prestige television era that writers and directors were able to sort of like take things into their own creative control and not have to abide by television conventions anymore.
Yeah.
So fuck you, guy. Anyway, and the final one. This one comes from @WardDPatrick on Twitter, who I'll have you know is a Fox News producer and a Tom Brady enthusiast. Hot take.
Which one's worse?
Blood is boiling.
Hot take: The Sopranos is not as good as you remember it.
Oh
my god!
As somebody who watched it back then and is rewatching it, it is better.
You are uniquely qualified.
I am uniquely qualified
because I've watched it like every year for the past 20 years.
And let me tell you, it's like it. You could put it out today, the directing aside. And like it would be the best show on TV. Like it's better than all whatever
there,
dramas people are into these days.
There's
like Westworld's.
Yes, there's no show that is as well acted and dramatic and dynamic and also as funny as that.
Yes.
As this show is.
Yeah, you are
like,
correct.
The combination of those things, those elements, are just like unfounded on any other show.
Exactly.
Yeah. Keep trying
so
to
fuck you.
Yeah, so fuck you. Have fun
so
producing
enjoy,
Fox and
yeah,
Friends.
Yeah, enjoy your time with Brett Baer, you fuck you fuckhead. Matt, thank you so much for basically being the catalyst for this episode with your bizarre takes. thank you for coming on.
Oh, you're welcome.
Thank you, Matt.
You're welcome. That was a joy. I'm a big fan of the pod.
Thank you. Do you have anything you'd like to promote? Maybe our
podcast? I'm going to be, sometime in the next year or two, maybe next 3 years, I'm going to be doing a shot-for-shot remake of the movie Cleaver.
I mean, that's amazing.
Look for that.
I think you should do that.
Yeah, that's it. That's it.
You can hear me and Matt and our friend John, if you're an NBA fan. We do an NBA comedy podcast called The Super Hoopers. You can find us where you get your podcast from.
The Super Hoopers or just
it's,
Super Hoopers?
It's The Super Hoopers.
Oh, shit.
Okay.
I got that.
You can, eh, fuck you, dude. you can always find us at @OSopranosPod on Instagram and Twitter. Please email us at osopranospod@gmail.com like our friend Ben Fetterman did. Let us know any concerns, things you liked, things you'd like us to be doing more of. Let us know, because we don't know if you don't tell us. Please like our shit on social media, and please review, subscribe, give us 5 boxes of ziti on iTunes, because that shit fucking helps. We don't want to fucking ask you to do that shit, but that shit helps people fucking find us. You can find me at David Futernick.
At Paul Gullius.
At Eric Early for Congress.
Son of a bitch.
Eric Early's still running, even though he lost. Until next time.
Oh!
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 Mother, don't you recognize your son? Thank you.